I'm going to call the meeting to order. This is a different kind of day today because we are going to be looking at budget reductions and looking at the governor's proposal. You will find in your packet a copy of the governor's proposal introduced by Representative Osmond. We will not be asking on that proposal today, but just so you see what we're dealing with and the amounts we're dealing with, it's important that you know that that's there. With that, we will invite DNR to start. I see you have some general sheets, and do you have a specific sheet too? The specific line item sheet?
Madam Chair, I do not.
I think that's important, the one...
The spreadsheet one? Hold on a second. Madam Chair, I'll get some copies made for you here right away. Madam Chair, if I may, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Why don't I walk through the two pages that we handed out while we're getting that spreadsheet copied, if
all
that's
right.
Okay? I'll first start with the one, budget initiatives. It says DNR Budget Initiative, 2008 Supplemental Budget. Madam Chair, the budget that the governor rolled out last Friday does contain some new dollars for the department. This sheet that is before you talks about those. The first one is $250,000 to implement several of the recommendations developed by the governor's task force on competitiveness of primary forest products industry. $53,000 of that would be for a study with the Forest Resource Council as a pass-through grant to work on parcelization, to build on existing efforts to identify assessments of trends, drivers, and effects of forest parcelization, assessment of the broad integrated set of policy approaches and recommendations for decision-makers on how to retain Minnesota's working forest. $197,000 of that appropriation would be for an interagency information cooperative, which is a pass-through grant to the University of Minnesota. In addition, that does fund the Common Forest Inventory format, describing attributes of Minnesota's public forest land base, growth models for managed forest lands, providing youth and forest management planning, forest wildlife habitat model formatting, and a database on Minnesota's family forest ownership. This would give us a detailed picture of county, state, federal, individual forest management and provide a tool as to how to manage those lands in conjunction to be more effective and more productive. In addition, $253,000 beginning in 2010 would be to provide for an inventory of approximately 50,000 acres of county-administered forest land, which otherwise might not be inventoried. So the bill that you'll have before you, I believe it will be introduced today, will identify 09 appropriations. In another document, there are appropriations going on into next biennium that we'll be discussing at some point in time. Moving on, park supplemental operating funding. In the natural resources account, there is a balance over $220,000. What we're asking for in this piece is to access some of those dollars that came from the parks operating, revenues that come from camping, sales of merchandise, things like that, $220,000 to put into the state park account to operate and maintain the state park system. You can see here these dollars would be used to operate the reservation system and revenue collection program for accelerated maintenance. to meet the unanticipated emergency repairs that are needed in the park system annually. These would be in addition to any dollars we would receive this session as well. Also, out of those accounts that have balances, we're looking to access $300,000 from the all-terrain vehicle account for maintenance, monitoring, and rehabilitation of the state's motorized trails, vehicle trails. If you turn the page, we're asking for $123,000 in this biennium still, and $246,000 in 2009 to help us conduct surveillance and monitoring activities for fish VHS activities. These monies will cover the additional cost of sampling, transporting, and testing fish for disease. In the bill that you will see, there will be language that will allow us to recover our costs for what we charge for fish testing currently. Currently, our fish testing costs recover about $3,000, and we're up to cost us $24,000 to do that work. So what this initiative would do would provide us $21,000, allow us to set the fees to recover $21,000 in costs to cover our costs. What we're looking for is language similar that we've had in other bills in the past that would allow us to capture our costs for operating the program by doing it, publishing in the state register, rather than coming back and setting those fees in statute, which is problematic for us at times. Moving on, the water rec account transfer. This initiative provides the legislative authority for a one-time transfer of $594,000. This transfer was accounted for last session, but no language was actually authorized to pass it into the account. The APO bill, which is moving forward in this body, is billed out in the budget at $100,000. Madam Chair, we'll need to come back and revisit this. We are not anticipating this to be bringing in $100,000 of revenue, nor to cost $100,000 in expenditures either. But we can talk more about that as we move forward and that bill progresses forward as well. Water permit fee increase. The bill will have language, or does have language, that corrects some language that was passed last year. Just clarifies it, I should say, not correct, that the water appropriation fees that we charge are for people who apply for water permits, not just for people who receive them. So it will be able to cover our costs, the initial cost of doing those activities. And if a person does not receive a permit, they would still be charged. Lastly, the water assessments reports. We had a legislative initiative that is carried in the supplemental budget language that would repeal a water assessment report that we do. Duplicative reporting on groundwater quality and availability already published by EQB. This is an issue we've been working with Representative Gardner on as well. I'm not sure where he is at, or his committee is at, I should say, with the work on those activities. But this does dovetail into that, and it would save approximately $38,000 a biennium. Any questions on any of those initiatives at all?
Oh, I'll start with the last one. There's been an inconsistency between what EQB is saying about water resources and DNR is saying about water resources. So I don't see how you square those two things. I mean, your reporting, your studies are very, very different. Is this covered, those studies and reporting that are so different?
Madam Chair, members, working with Representative Gardner, we present information to the Environmental Quality Board. They sometimes interpret it differently than the way it was presented to them, and that's where some of these issues come about, and that's the duplicative problem we're trying to solve, and it's kind of, I don't want to call it a conflict, it's just inconsistency. And I can bring down Kent Lockesmo if you want to talk about that a little bit further.
I think there's been some major inconsistency. I mean, when we hear from DNR and say there is no water in the southeast region, and that we need to go into the Missouri Basin to bring water on pipe water up, and then we hear from the EQB that it appears that there's plenty of water in that region. So I don't know that we need to get into that at this point, but I think we need to make sure that we're giving good information to the public, and that was more than a small inconsistency.
Madam Chair, we would agree with you 100%. We're working to try to figure out the best way to report to the legislature and the citizens of the state the information they need and make sure that everybody is in agreement on that information as well.
All right. You want to go to the...
There are no other questions, Madam Chair. I'll move to the next piece. Do we have copies now of the spreadsheet sent to
you? We do.
Okay, great. I'll go through this and then we'll go kind of look at the spreadsheet at the same time. As you're well aware, the governor's budget recommends approximately a 4% general fund reduction for each agency. That amounts to $2,939,000 in 09 and a little bit more than $2.9 million in 10. My focus on this piece here will be 09, but you'll see on the spreadsheet we do have 2010 numbers as well. In going through our recommendations to the Department of Finance, we recognize the pressures that certain divisions within the department have and the challenges that they have because of the amount of general fund that is funded, that general fund that funds their program, such as forestry, water, and parks. So you'll see that although parks had some reductions, it was offset with some increases. We tried to minimize the reductions to the Division of Water, and actually the Division of Forestry is not even on these costs. There's a situation within the Division of Forestry, which is a forest management investment account that we will need to discuss at some point in time. It's about $7 million in the hole right now, projected to be a lot worse in the coming years. So there will also be language in the bill that you will see that helps us alleviate some of those pressures. But we'll get to that once we have that language in front of us. So you'll see, I'm just going to jump down under the major project elements. You'll see the totals there in the tables. I'm going to go right to lands and minerals. Lands and minerals 2009 reduction is for $225,000. And then if you look at the spreadsheet, $124,000 of that in 09 will be for iron ore cooperative agreements, and $101,000 will be from the minerals diversification account. Now, these are grants that we do iron ore research with, and also grants for minerals diversification. These appropriations won't be zeroed out, but they will be reduced. The minerals diversification works on issues such as how do we explore and find new minerals in the state. Non-ferrous mineral work was funded out of these grants. The iron ore cooperative agreements deal with research on existing facilities where our funding and our cooperative agreements with the taconite industry has been coming from for mercury reduction opportunities and our research. But again, we aren't zeroing these out. We're just reducing the grants that are going out there.
Why don't you tell us how much we'll be going, and because that's the missing piece here. I mean, out of what? That's the question you would have.
Back to on all of them.
Okay.
I mean, without having our book, without having our book, we don't know what we started with.
Madam Chair, I need to get that information in front of me here. Just give me one second.
I think perhaps as we go forward, and one of the things I told the agencies and to share with you, that if you have questions today that you can't be answered, they will be bringing me the answers back on Thursday. So, perhaps the way we should handle this, Mr. Meyer, is in Thursday, you give us a column that says out of what, because that question is going to, is capable of repeating and will repeat. So would that be fair to members? Is that helpful to do it that way? Let's save some time now.
Madam Chair, we can do that. Just on these, on the iron ore cooperative agreements, it is $475,000, that was the original appropriation, so that'll be reduced by $124,000. And the minerals diversification was a $300,000 appropriation, which will be reduced by $101,000. But I will get that. We will explain or spread out this sheet one more column so you can see the remaining appropriation that is there.
I think that would be helpful.
And I apologize for not having that information on this sheet right now. Madam Chair, moving forward into water, this is one of the areas that we were trying to preserve as much work and research that needs that can, we can. So we've identified several programs that were passed through grants. One for the Mississippi Headwaters, which was a $65,000 grant, which will impact the resulting in less review of zoning decisions. We're also looking at a $5,000 reduction to the Leech Lake grant, $22,000 reduction to Ring Dyke, $30,000 to the Red River coordination, and then $98,000 in the 09 for clean water appropriation that we received, which will be coming from salary savings that have occurred through hiring delays on those positions.
Representative Stolfi has a question for you here.
Well, I did, but I think maybe the last part of your sentence answered it. I was just wondering, what does that mean to reduce $98,000 to the Clean Water Act? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, in establishing these positions, it has taken some time to get them set up, to get them posted, get everything lined up, so the salary savings on this will be coming directly from those activities.
And then as a follow-up, what would that salaried person have been doing? So what are we missing by cutting that salaried person for the Clean Water Act?
Madam Chair, Kent Lockett, Division of Water. Representative Scalzi, what happened is that those positions are doing stream gauging, so we know the quantity of water in the stream, so you need to know the quantity of water to deal with the amount of impairment. So it just took time to hire all of those positions, so they will be doing stream gauging. It's just the 3, 4, 5 months that it took to hire those, we didn't spend the salary dollars. We took the one-time appropriation and divided, essentially we're looking at it as 2 years of appropriation.
Similarly on the other things in waters, what are the outcomes from the reductions in the ring dikes and the reductions in the Red River flooding damage? What are the outcomes we're going to see from these reductions?
Madam Chair, for ring dikes, it would mean we would build one less ring dike. And the Red River flood damage is a program that is implementing the mediation agreement from 1998. And last session, that appropriation increased from $210,000, I believe it was, to $310,000. So we're reducing that by $30,000 in the first year and by $60,000 in 10. So it's reducing it somewhat from the increase that was provided this annual.
So in decreasing the money, what is the outcome from the decrease in the money?
Basically, there hasn't been any cost share required for that program, so the local watershed districts, the 9 Red River watershed districts that are dealing with mediation would provide more local dollars. And the coordination will continue between the agencies and the Red River watershed districts. So there'll be a slightly less coordination. They may be developing having less engineering going to developing projects, so there'll be some delay in that.
Madam Chair, are there any other questions on the water division, water division at all?
I'm still not clear on so we were going to require some cost share in Red River areas where we weren't requiring cost share. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, there's not a requirement for cost share, but there are local dollars in the watershed districts that go into that. They aren't relying only on state dollars to conduct the business in the Red River Valley. So this will allow a little bit more local commitment, but it's not a requirement of of a cost share, mm-hmm. but to keep the same level. They're doing such things as river gauging and water quality monitoring is one of the programs that they have. I think they have $75,000 of this money goes towards that. There are local teams in each watershed district that get together to discuss potential projects. The whole idea behind the mediation was to have the early coordination so they didn't do a design of a project and get to the end and then have a project design that could not be permitted. So we have this upfront coordination. That upfront coordination will continue also. Riverwatch may be reduced, some of their other gauging. They may have fewer meetings. So what exactly this means to that group, I'd have to check with them again. But I expect that it'll just be slowed down.
Well, I think I get it. So if they want to accomplish the same amount of work, they're going to have to put in more local dollars. If they don't have the local dollars, there's going to be a lesser amount of work put in. Is that what you're telling me?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, that's
correct. Okay.
Madam Chair, moving forward, the next piece of this fact sheet discusses regional operations. What we're doing here is we have a vacancy in one of planner positions. We'll be eliminating that vacancy, and the work will be shared across the other regions. Regions 1 and 2, which is the northern part of the state, will be sharing a planner with this position here. That's a savings of approximately $100,000. And that's at the bottom of your spreadsheet. I apologize if these are things. Trails and waterways, Madam Chair, you'll see on the spreadsheet the total here, $250,000 in '09, $275,000 in '10. Where this will come from is we reduced maintenance efforts on state trails, reducing contracts that we have, and also 2.5 FTEs. Fiscal year 10, there'll be a further reduction in contracts, interpretation, and vegetative management. This maintenance will occur on the bike trail and other non-motorized activities, since this is where all of our general fund dollars go. And in addition, the reduction in maintenance will apply to the rehabilitation of ski, hike, and horseback trails in state forests. One of the things in the trails and waterways is similar to the Department of Division of Game and Fish, is there's a substantial amount of user dollars in that system. So where people are paying dollars into accounts, ATVs, snowmobiles, boating, things of that nature, those activities will continue at the same level that they're at right now.
We had testimony when we were doing our budget from folks, I think fair to say, representing the tourism industry, saying maintenance of trails, the lack of maintenance of trails, was hurting them. I certainly remember that testimony. Maybe other people do too. So when we are impacting our local businesses like that, it doesn't exactly seem wise to me. I don't know how other members may feel about that. Representative Moe, do you have a question on that?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Meyer, I understand we're in tough financial times and you guys have a difficult job to try to push this forward. But I think, echoing Chair Wagenius' concern, many of our trails are at the point of the damage to them now. I mean, we perhaps should just decommission them then if we're not going to maintain them any further. Mr. Bowe, I mean, this is your area. You understand that some of these trails, that the damage that we have now, we're so far behind in deferred maintenance. Are we perhaps just looking at taking some of these trails offline then? Or maybe you could comment a little bit on how we take this much money out of a system that's already significantly strained. I think you and I could agree on that. I mean, maybe not in this forum you could agree on that, but...
Madam Chair, Representative Moe, my name is Forrest Bowe. I'm the Director of the Trails and Waterways Division.
This is a reduction from an increase that the legislature funded last session. You funded an increase of $750,000 for our state trail system, and this reduction it comes off the top of that. So in essence, we are still ahead from where we were a year ago, but it is a significant reduction to the state trail system and the maintenance thereof.
I think the important question is not what we put in last year, because that wasn't the total amount of deferred maintenance. What is the total amount of deferred maintenance that is out there now, and how does this, what percentage of, let's just start with that. What's the total amount of deferred maintenance you have right now?
We look at our deferred maintenance in a couple of different ways. One, of course, is we address deferred maintenance through our bonding initiative. And we have a bonding request this year for $3 million for state trails. And that really will satisfy a lot of our needs as it pertains to the bridges and some of the worst areas that the asphalt is in disrepair. The second part of that, of course, is to have a good maintenance budget where you can do tar patching, crack sealing, those kinds of things before you get into a situation where you need to have a large project where you need to do major repairs on state trails. So kind of a two-pronged approach.
Yes, go ahead and follow up, Representative Bill. I have a question, too. And let me just put my question on the table first. It's not a question. I think it would be helpful on Thursday for you to bring a spreadsheet that shows what the total deferred maintenance is and your plan for fixing it. How's that? Is that helpful to the committee? Is that?
Okay.
Representative Bill.
Well, that would be, Madam Chair, because we have the same thing with the state parks, you know, to understand what the, I think it's $120 million or $110 million in backlog would be nice. I don't think it's going to be that big, but hopefully not, but this number, but it would be nice to know. But my question is, Madam Chair, of the $200,000 and the $275,000, you talk about reducing contracts, and Director Bowitt, I'm really concerned that MCC is going to take it on the chin in this proposal. We've tried to support MCC because of the great value that they provide us in terms of management of our trails and waterways, for that matter. And I'm just wondering, could you characterize to the committee how that might play into this reduced contract?
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, it would not be our intent to reduce the MCC contract under this proposal. We too feel that they are very worthwhile organization and do a lot of work for us and very responsive to our needs on state trails. The contracts we're talking about here are larger contracts to do crack sealing, to do small areas of repaving where asphalt is broken up, and to do a variety of other types of contracting with regard to invasive species management and those kinds of things.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this is a question for you. It seems to me if we're looking at cutting the maintenance budget for the state trails we have, I don't see how in good conscience we can be building more. And as you know, we've got a significant bonding request for continuing trails. I mean, I think we need to evaluate that. We know from being on the ground how far behind we are in maintenance now. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me that we're building additional trails. And maybe as we go forward in our bonding bill, as much as I hate to say it because it's my priority item, maybe we want to reevaluate our recommendations for state trails.
As we discussed that number, the problem with that right now is that would mean that the folks that have trails will be taken care of, and the rest of the parts of the state that don't have trails will always be without them. So in trying to be fair around the state, you did put forth a very balanced package, which was fair around the state. And so those are the two sides of the issue right there. Before you came in, some of the members came in, let me tell you one of the things that we put forth is that when you have questions that cannot be answered today, we've talked to the agencies and they will be bringing the questions back before us in the full committee on Thursday so that we all get to hear the same information. So the typing is keeping a list of those questions, and so we'll make sure that everything is here on Thursday when it comes back.
Madam Chair, thank you. Moving on to the Parks and Recs Division, if there is no other questions for Mr. Bowe. All right, you'll see in the Parks and Rec Division of Parks and Recreation, we're recommending a $450,000 reduction in 2009 and a $450,000 reduction in 2010. The bulk of these dollars will be recovered by shifting some costs for our internal professional services dealing with architecture and design. They'll be shifted to be coming out of capital bonding dollars rather than out of our parks operation budget, similar to what other agencies do. This will result in the reduction of some of those capital bonding dollars that are available for construction and rehabilitation projects. In addition, we're going to be reducing our parks and regional supply and expense budgets by approximately 3%, and also there'll be a reduction of one internship opportunity as we move forward into 2009.
Let me just, in two places now, we're hearing that you're going to rely more on bonding, which means that we're paying more for each project than we would if we were paying cash. So this notion of going a more expensive way is troubling. And also then, if you're relying on $270,000 in bonding, if that's what I understood you to say earlier when we were visiting.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not clear what number you're talking about.
Well, in part, you said you're going to shift and it's going to be more bonding dollars will be used to fund. How much, maybe is a better question, because I thought I had written down 270, and maybe that's different. What is the amount that will be shifted to bonding? And then the next question is what on the list of deferred maintenance and construction then won't be done? Because we did have that list from you, and we've made copies and handed it out to all members so they know and that we're expecting which projects were going to be done.
Madam Chair, I'm Cortland Nelson, Director of State Park. To your question, Madam Chair, it will be approximately $250,000 for the two FTEs that would transfer to the billing services that would take money from capital bonding dollars. That would leave approximately $200,000 that we would spread out through a reduction in supply and expense, and then the one intern, as well as small projects within the park, within the park system, that would be distributed. It would not in any direct way impact those previously discussed projects that we talked about. These dollars would generally be used for emergency things that would come up in the summer if there was a water system that broke, if there was an emergency from some natural disaster, if there was a hidden expense that came up. Those are the kind of things that these dollars would be used from our general fund dollars, not the capital project.
Representative Salvi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. What I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a shift from maintenance dollars to bonding dollars. And that, I guess, is a little troubling to me since we've been going through the bonding bill with the specific areas that we would be paying for in capital dollars. and to hear that maybe we would be doing more maintenance with those capital dollars, I just don't know how that's going to work.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that is a fair assessment of that situation. I've been told in the last 15 or 20 years that these kind of shifts of personnel into bonding dollars and out or a similar type fund has been done with some frequency, depending on where monies are available and where dollars are. So the precedent of that has been established, I'm told, not often, but it's not something that hasn't occurred before, or that has occurred before. It's just simply our measure to try and reduce the immediate impacts on our annual operating budget and to shift them to an area where we would expect there would be some increase in the bonding dollars that are available. But it does have the impact that you described. There will be approximately $250,000 of capital development activities that will not get done because we will be paying those professional expenses.
Madam Chair, this is similar to the way other agencies operate with their bonding dollars. I believe you'll see language in the bonding bill that allow for administrative costs in other agencies that do similar design work as well.
That is understood for design work, and we understand that. The issue here is when you said in the past it shifted back and forth, but we see that this budget reduction bill does not deal with the budget reductions that we'll need to do in the next biennium. So I don't see the possibility of the shifting back. So it doesn't feel like a temporary shift to me. It feels permanent, and then to be paying the cost plus interest for positions is probably not the best accounting method to adopt, at least from my point of view. And I don't know how other members of the committee feel about that. That's why we're discussing this, so we fully understand it. Okay. Do you want to go on?
Madam Chair, members, if there are no other questions for Parks, I'll move on to Fish and Wildlife. This is another area where we've identified several grants that were in the bill. The first one would be $175,000 for the second year of the Let's Go Fishing grant that was funded out of general fund dollars last year. The second one is looking at the Minnesota Shooting Sports Education Center in Grand Rapids, trying to figure out how to operate that more effectively. One of the things we're looking at are actually transferring several DNR staff into that facility to work there. Our forestry information center that does our aerial photography and things like that, we're trying to figure out if that would be a good fit for them that would provide for a reduction in the operating cost of that facility. We're also looking at a reduction through our licensing center. The mailroom will be funded by internal billings through the divisions rather than funded out of the game or the Fish and Wildlife Division. And also looking at a direct reduction to the Prairie Wetlands appropriation that was funded last year at $500,000 each year, reducing that to $300,000. In addition, we'll be looking at restructuring the division. Efficiencies will be gained through the restructuring of the Fish and Wildlife Division, which has not occurred for some time. We do have some numbers that we need to look at, people reporting to people and things like that, so we can gain some efficiencies at that level as well.
Representative Mull.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, and I'm not an accountant, so you have to explain this to me maybe, but how does shifting the cost of the mailroom to other departments reduce the budget for the DNR overall? I don't understand that. And I guess, and this is the second question, the broader question. I was looking over the spreadsheet with Representative Gardner, and with all due respect to your staff in the room, all I see is reductions in regional offices and divisions, and I don't see any reduction in the central office. And I know that there's, I know we all work as hard as we can to get value for the tax dollar, and I think that
perhaps there's some efficiencies in the upper administration that aren't that that haven't been offered forward here. Maybe you could speak to that too,
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe. Starting with the mailroom, the $52,000 that are being funded to operate that entity would be transferred into what we have is that we call our government operations support. We have a board that looks at all these business type decisions that we run, fleet, telecommunications, technology, and we determine the appropriate levels that each division should be billed back. Those costs would be run through our operations support governance model and then distributed back to the divisions. As far as central office, many of these activities are directly related to the central office and will have a direct impact. If you look at Clean Water Act, those positions would have been in central. Parks and Recreation, those are central. Two FTEs, I'm not directly sure where those will come from, but there will be some reductions there. The efficiencies gained through the restructuring of the Fish and Wildlife Division will be central. Some of the enforcement pieces were housed in our central office. So many of these cuts are coming from our central office operations. I can get you some more information on that if you desire, but I would say out of the total, you know, roughly half is probably coming from our central operations, if you look at it that way. So, but I can, again, get you more information on that if you desire.
I think the underlying question there is, are there additional things in your central office that you can do? And so that would be a specific question to bring back on Thursday. Is that helpful?
That would be great. Okay. Not that we want to eliminate an assistant commissioner or anything, Mr. Meyer.
Some days it's not a bad idea.
Okay, I have Representative Hansen and then Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Meyer, on that point, could you get us a list of the commissioner's plan employees, their salary, travel expenditures, and any bonuses that they may have received in the last year?
When you say commissioner's plan, I'm not sure.
The bargaining unit, the commissioner's plan. No, sure.
The bargaining unit, the commissioner's plan, so that would be managerial, commissioner's office, and managerial staff. Not middle management, may perhaps me, or the conservation office.
And
okay, well, that will be for Thursday. Okay, Representative Jill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, on the shooting center education, I've actually not been to that, but I've been to next door to it 75 times. There's a very extensive shooting facility that's immediately next door. Has the department ever discussed a way to do a co-management agreement with the gun club that's next door for the shooting center? And the reason I ask that is because, as you know, I've been promoting a shooting education sports center here in the metro a bit. And when I travel around the countryside, meaning in many other states, Arizona, Nebraska, Illinois, on and on, they have a lot of those are managed by nonprofits. And they seem to get the same type of services. That was just my question. I think you understand where
Madam Chair, as Director Schatz coming down, I would just like to remind people what the Minnesota Shooting Sports Center actually is. It's a facility that was built with state bonding dollars. It's not a DNR facility. So it's one that we were directed through the biennial budget process to provide funds to them as a grant to help them operate. So with that, I'll let Director Schatz talk a little bit more about it.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Dave Shad, Director of Fish and Wildlife Division, and Representative Dill, we are looking at options in the community to maintain that facility as a shooting sports facility. As you point out, in that immediate vicinity, there is a sportsman's club there. Right across the road, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association have their office, and we're also understanding that there may be some interest in from law enforcement for some shooting facilities in the area. So the phase out of the state funding here over the next year and a half will give us some time to work in the community and try to look at various options to, again, provide some community support for that building. Perhaps, if you, so to speak, subsidize the operation of the building by putting some state employees in there during the day and managing the facility on weekends and evenings as a shooting sports center, and try to kind of come up with some win-win situations where we can make full use of the building, make sure the community is getting some value from that building, and also continue to provide those shooting sport opportunities.
Do you want to go on?
Madam Chair, the next category is ecological resources. Again, we will be looking at restructuring this organization as well. Some of the other reductions that you'll see on the spreadsheet relate to invasive species, $320,000 in 09, $643,000 in 2010. You can see the outcomes related to that. Also in 2010, there would be a $20,000 reduction to Project Wild. And again, $482,000 one time to the Clean Water Act appropriation. And actually, why don't I just bring down Steve Hirsch to talk about that right now.
Madam Chair and members, Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological Resources. Just to provide some context for the Division's Clean Water Legacy Appropriation, we were appropriated $2.25 million as a one-time appropriation for the biennium, and the original spending plan for that was to hire five positions, four of those for providing technical assistance for TMDL planning, and one of those four positions would actually be out in the regions, and then one position to provide interagency coordination for TMDL planning. That position would be in central office. We still plan on filling those positions, but as with Mr. Lacasmoan indicated, we have salary savings right now projected at about $232,000. So that would be that portion of the $482,000 would be salary savings. And for those positions, it's just in addition to the things that Mr. Lacasmoan indicated, these are new positions. We've had to spend some time developing position descriptions, determining classification levels, and just trying to figure out exactly how they were going to function in this new role for the department. The other things that we were going to do with the appropriation were biological monitoring for TMDL plans. This is also called Index of Biotic Integrity Monitoring. This is essentially sampling of non-game fish to determine the environmental health of a water by the species diversity. And we still plan on doing this right now with the funding that we would still have after the cut. We would be doing the lakes on a 13-year cycle. We were going to use $160,000 to expand that IBI monitoring, so we would be on a 10-year cycle. So with the proposed cut, we would still be on the 13-year cycle. And then we've got monitoring of mercury in fish tissue that would continue at the current level. There would be no plan cuts for that. And then the other thing we were going to look at was expanding applicability of the IBI tool, or the Index of Biotic Integrity tool. And what I mean by that is right now the tool that we use, the interpretation that we do for the species diversity, does not fit very well for large lakes and lakes in northeast Minnesota, so we were going to try to collect enough information to expand the applicability of that tool, and we would not do that under the proposed cuts, at least for this biennium, and that would be $160,000. So that gives you, if you just to recap then, there's the $232,000 in salary savings, $90,000 where we would not expand the IBI monitoring to a 10-year cycle, and then $90,000 where we would not expand the applicability of the IBI monitoring. We would also continue to develop the watershed assessment tool, as we have been doing, even under the proposed cuts.
What is the cost of the biological monitoring for mercury? And I ask that because I would not expect to see great changes year to year without huge additional reductions in mercury. So is there a way to garner some savings by doing that on a more periodic basis?
Madam Chair, the cost of the mercury monitoring is pretty much a function of how many sites or how many lakes you do the monitoring from. And we've been doing, with other funding, we've been doing about 50 sites, or up to 50 sites. But the Clean Water Legacy Sampling takes care of about 60 to 70 sites. And the goal that we've established with the Pollution Control Agency is to do 100 sites. So we would still be under the Clean Water Legacy Sampling doing about 60 to 70 sites.
When you do those sites, are you sampling like every year or every 5 years, or what's the cycle here?
Madam Chair, the number of sites that I've been that I mentioned are sites that we sample every year. I am not sure if we go to every lake that we're sampling every year, if we stagger them. I could find that out. I'm just not sure.
Let's look at that and see that if we could go to more lakes on a longer cycle. I mean, you do want to figure out what's happening over time, but I have trouble believing that we would have year-to-year reductions that would be significant. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, and Mr. Hirsch. I wanted to go back to the invasive species line and just if you could elaborate on we had provided additional money, where this stands in the reduction to what we had provided. I mean, are we going below what we provided last year?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, these are the invasive species reductions would be reductions from planned increases that the legislature provided in appropriations last year. So, for example, in fiscal year 2009, without any cuts, our program would have increased by a little over $2 million. With the proposed cuts of $320,000, the program will still see increases of slightly more than $1.7 million. And that's for all funding sources.
That's in 2009 and then 2010.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, in fiscal year 10, then the increase, instead of being a little over $2 million, would be $1.4 million under the proposed cut.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Hirsch. So looking at the outcomes, these are mainly containment type of things that are not going to be done. And then on the aquatic reduction and inspection, so kind of prevention and containment, and then one enforcement position. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, I can provide a little bit more detail there. Under the proposed cut in fiscal year 2009 of $320,000, $220,000 of that would be directed on the aquatic side, and it would be invasive aquatic plant control. There'd be about a 200-acre reduction there. And to put that in context, we did about 1,200 acres. We would still do about 1,900 acres in FY09 instead of 2,100 acres. Then we would reduce watercraft inspection hours by 4,000 hours, but we currently do 24,000 hours, and we would still do next year a little over 38,000 hours. So we would still have quite a sizable jump there, but it would be about 4,000 hours less than it would have been. And then with the enforcement position, it's actually a half of FTE that we'll lose from this funding. What we were doing with enforcement is we have currently wetland enforcement officers, and what we were going to do is combine duties of those officers with invasive species enforcement, and then have 10 total FTEs or 10 positions. Half of those would be funded with invasive species funding. So we would be leaving, at least for the time being, one enforcement position vacant, and a half FTE of that funding would be invasive species funding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to ask, as far as the where the reductions are coming from, what the base is for all of these different categories, if that information could be provided
I don't know if it's all coming from increases that were allocated last year, so or if it's going deeper than that in some cases. But that would be very helpful.
Madam Chair, Representative, we are going to be updating this spreadsheet to identify that more clearly, so we'll have that available on Thursday for you.
Thank you.
Do you have other things for us?
Madam Chair, just lastly, the Division of Enforcement has a $150,000 reduction. The first one being post-related to two positions, one the advanced hunter education position and the other one the law enforcement recruiter position. So those are two positions that we would eliminate that are housed in the central office as well.
I don't see other questions for members. You are going to bring us some information about any other than the DNR roundtable, how many stakeholder groups you were planning to hold in the next or for the rest of this biennium?
I'm sure we are working on pulling that information together. I will coordinate with your staff today on the questions that the committee has and any other questions you may have, and
well, we have
do our best to get those back to you as soon as possible.
Okay, well, we'll have them on Thursday. And then one more question. One of the things that we, in our budget bill last year, asked DNR to make sure that the ethanol and mining industries were paying the full cost of their permits, and that there was no subsidy being made by the general public. And I understand some progress has been made on that front, but all of the expenses have not been incorporated. And so on Thursday, if we could hear a report on that and how much will be saved when you incorporate all those expenses, that would be helpful to have on Thursday. Members, are there other questions? Representative Hansen, but if there are other questions, let's put them on the table now so other folks can hear what they are.
Chair, Mr. Meyer, I know agencies often have an indirect charge that they use on federal grants or even some dedicated or licensed fees, and that there's a state indirect charge and then an agency indirect charge. Do you know what those are for your agency, or could you get that for us?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that right off the top of my head, and I will get that. That will be included in our information.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Assistant Director Meyer. I was just wondering, since we're currently working on the bonding bill and there are going to have to be some cuts made, I'm wondering if you have a contingency plan, and maybe I didn't get the figure right, but I understood that you would be relying on $250,000 in bonding dollars, and I'm wondering if that's correct, if you have a contingency plan if some of those dollars may be cut in negotiations, because we have to get our bonding bill down. So I'd like to know that as well.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, can you go back to the advanced hunter education specialist, the 85 and 75? So there is one in the department, there is one of these individuals, and so we're going from one to zero, is that correct? And what has been the outcome of the effort that this person has put forward? Now, where I'm going with this is Colonel Hamm, is I'm thinking about the decline in demographics for young hunters and the income stream that comes into the Game and Fish Fund, which Representative Lagunas has to work with. And I'm just wondering how that's all going to tie together and fit together. So I guess the outcome is what I'm interested in. What you perceive will happen if we go along with this reduction?
Madam Chair, Colonel Mike Hamm, Chief Conservation Officer, and to that point, Representative Dillon, that's a very good question. Over the course of the years, the Advanced Hunter Ed program got its beginning back in the mid-70s, and quite honestly has been struggling for many years, has been housed in many different places within the department. Probably the last 10 or 12 years has been housed in the enforcement division. And what we have done is through attrition, we have taken the good points of what the Advanced Hunter Ed program had to offer, like the clinics, the bear clinic, the deer clinic, the waterfowl clinic, some of these other turkey clinics, some of these other very important things, and put them into our education program as a whole. So we are now down to just this one Advanced Hunter Ed person that has been writing the curriculum and keeping the curriculum up to date, but we're not in the participation from older Minnesota's wanting to take this particular course. So it doesn't have an impact on the availability of being certified, because we still have the firearm safety program. And so through attrition, we've been able to take what have been the successful parts of that course and put it into the firearm safety. And so we'll keep our bow hunter education program. And because technology has also come along with the internet and the ability to take these courses over the internet in the last 4 or 5 years, some things have just changed technology-wise, and we just don't think that we're going to have this need anymore.
So, Madam Chair, so I hear from that you think that you can still get the same outcome without the position as you would with it.
Madam Chair and Representative Dill, I think it'll be about the same, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Moe's comment about new commitments versus maintenance on old commitments is really instructive here. I think we should give more thought to that. And he was talking specifically about the trails portion. Representative Scalzi also has suggested that we have a bonding dilemma as well, and I think those two theories converge a little bit. And my point is in the bonding process, I see sticking out there this park in northeastern Minnesota, which perhaps should be given a real, real hard look. Going back to Representative Moe's approach that we should take care of what we have first rather than overcommit ourselves into new ventures. And lastly, most of the indicators that I look at tell me, and I'm no economist, but most of the indicators tell me that next year at this time, this hole we're in will be deeper.
We can do just one more on that, but I think we need to move along to PCA, and we're going to have time on two counts to hear back from the agencies, and we'll have discussion time too.
Well, Madam Chair, not everyone here has the same passion for snowmobiling that I do, but you know, we have done exactly what Representative Moe has suggested. With the snowmobile account, there is a moratorium on trail development. I mean, those people are paying the bill. It's not coming from general fund. Now, granted, there is perceived not to be a shortage, but one comment that was made, I think, by you, Madam Chair, is that, you know, people that have trails have them. People who don't have trails don't have them. But in the snowmobile end of that, there's quite a number of people that still don't have trails, communities that don't have trails that access businesses and things like that, and they're waiting in the wings to get those things, but we just simply have a moratorium on new trail development. And that's with a self-paying system, not a general fund paying system. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that we take a tack that Representative Moe is discussing, maybe not a complete moratorium, but maybe a different approach.
We will discuss that further at some date. One other question for you, for Thursday, and then we will ask if there's any public comment. We are going to get to PCA, but I think their presentation will be shorter, and we know they're coming back on Thursday. Besides water permitting, is there any other permitting in DNR that where the person asking for the permit doesn't fully pay the cost to the state. So we need to have any additional ones like that on the table, because that's another possibility of having people pay for their own costs rather than having the taxpayers pay for them. So, Representative Ansel.
Sorry to ask another question here, Madam Chair, but perhaps we should have a one-pager on an assessment of where we are in terms of permits. How many are in process? How many are projected? Not only with regard to the mining ventures, but ethanol and all the other projects, to get a better handle on this permitting thing. Because I certainly don't know enough about it to be comfortable.
Okay. That sounds fine. And with that, we appreciate DNR coming up. We will hear again from you on Thursday. Is there any public testimony? Anybody in the public want to say a word or two? We have very little time, but we would take some testimony. I don't see any, so let's ask PCA if they'd like to come down. Welcome to the committee, and you have handouts for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I gave a copy of my slides to the committee that will be handed out. My name is Myrna Hallback, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Pollution Control Agency. With me today is Lyle Mueller, our Finance Manager. And since I'm new to my position, he will know the details better than I if you want to delve into some of our background. What we're going to do today is provide you the background relative to the governor's supplemental budget reductions and a couple areas where the chair asked us for some more information. First, to put this in perspective, overall the general fund is 17% of our budget, but 10% of that is one-time funding that occurred for the TMDL and a few other small projects. So our budget reduction was based on the base general fund, and with that, the goal was $473,000, or a 4% reduction for us. The 4% general fund reduction is broken into three program areas that we receive general funds: water, multimedia, and administrative support activities. And you will see that our budget reduction is expected to be constant across 09, 10, and 11 under the governor's scenario. Our efforts in this to meet these reductions will be based on improving our efficiency using technology, thinking less about what we need to print in hard copy and what can be made available using the internet, how we can do fewer on-site visits and using our video conferencing. Over the past year, we have worked very diligently with the Office of Enterprise Technology to upgrade our bandwidth and our video conferencing abilities so that folks can work with us. An example of where we used that was in our small sewage treatment system rule hearing process where we actually had the administrative law judge in St. Paul. They did not travel to the site. We were able to connect people across the state, not just where regional offices were or where we would technically go. So we broadened the ability for people to participate in the rural process that way. We would like to do that more often. Another incident, we have just been able to do webcasting at our agency. We will soon be webcasting our agency board meetings so that folks can watch that. Last Friday, we did our first webcasting as a training seminar where we had people located at three individual sites to learn about the blue-green algal growth and the problems it can have during the summer. But we allowed people across the state to watch that simultaneously on the webcasting. We would like to be able to use that more. The areas that we believe that we'll be able to use efficiency for really are in our training program. We do a number of refresher courses with our household hazardous waste partners where we could use online training. We've been investigating that. We want to use this as an impetus to really move us in that direction. We want to make sure the participants for our training programs are really paying the true cost. We want to reevaluate whether we're doing that. We want to truly think about recertification and what we need for recertification processes. Another area is in our computers and extending our life cycles. We had currently, we target for every 4 years to upgrade based on it. We, last year, with some savings, upgraded all the video monitors to replace the old ones and go to LCD panels, both for energy savings, but also for some of the off-gassing. They're on a different life cycle than our hard drives and CPU units, and so we're not afraid to extend some of those to do. The other sorts of things in our communications, for instance, we will be eliminating our Environmental Innovations Council, which met with us regularly to look out in the future and topical kinds of areas to think about. We have said we would do that more on a project specific and, again, using different technologies to seek that input so we can broaden the ability for people to share. In those cases, often people have to travel. The meetings will be in St. Paul, and they travel from all parts of the state, and there are various ways to have that so they don't need to travel. We again want to think about electronic and web-based techniques. We are trying to get our permits and our public notices better distributed using our internet and some of those to do. And so with that, our general fund reductions really are about tightening the belt, improving our cost efficiency, and getting the same level of outcomes, but really thinking about how much we need to produce hard copies and where training can be different. When we looked at our reductions, we really had a number of priorities that we did. First of all, we needed to maintain, we believe, our clean water legacy activities of assessment in the TMDL study. A number of people fought hard for those. We're required under federal law to do the studies within 13 years of putting them on notice and on our list. And the assessment, we are working towards a 10-year cycle for being able to evaluate our surface waters. Biofuels and mining continue to be emerging sectors, and the climate change global warming based on legislation last year and activities this year continue to expand. And when we talk about that, climate change and global warming, it's not only legislatively, but as we look at projects, we're being asked by citizens who look at our permitting in the air areas and asking us questions about carbon dioxide. What are the greenhouse gases? What are the energy efficiencies? We will be spending more time looking at those areas. We also wanted to maintain our core regulatory programs and activities, so you will not see staffing cuts in those areas. And we have grants to the local government, both in our FEVOT programs, household hazardous waste, and they help us implement the TMDL studies and assessment activities. And then we have our environmental investigatory, so how do we understand mercury? Where are we on PFCs around them? We did not reduce those. Madam Chair, you asked us to provide you some information relative to travel.
Yes.
This table represents both our in-state travel and those travel expenses that we incur going out of state. When we talk in-state travel, that is about our staff doing inspections out to facilities. And because we have distances to travel, often they may stay overnight. It includes those sorts of things that we do to sampling events, and again, we will have people out there. We go to city council meetings, those sorts of things. They also, of course, come to St. Paul. We have regional offices. They come to St. Paul for meetings, and it includes training events within the state. So sorts of things like the Air, Waste, and Water Conference, when our folks come, they pay those costs as well. To do. Travel out of state will include, for instance, many of the efforts we do with EPA. EPA often puts on training events that are only held by them and only put on by them. So our air permitting and MCDF permitting, particularly new staff, they go to those where they are in the year. We work hard to have EPA have those here so we don't have to do traveling, but they rotate them, because every state would like that. It also includes work we do with the Great Lakes states and how we manage and try to do consistency that way. So ultimately, you'll see we've increased travel a little bit in 06-07. Those are actual expenses on a per-person basis, about $1,500 to relatively $1,800. We do budget those expenses up front, and we base that on our historical efforts.
Representative Hanson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Hoback. I'm just looking for the same information I asked for from DNR, the indirect charges, the state indirect, and then the agency indirect, and then also the commissioner's plan, salary, travel, and any bonuses.
We'll bring those on Thursday. The next question you asked a little bit about were contracting. And so I've broken this in a couple areas. We have about 20 master contracts. I have listed some of the more major ones. Our emergency response, so when we respond to spills or discharges that have acted, we need to have someone ready to act in the moment's notice. So we have a master contract that our staff in the regional offices in St. Paul can call upon at a moment's notice. Our impaired waters, most of that money is bundled through contracts or grants with local units of government or the University of Minnesota or the Mankato State, those sorts of events. So we're contracting much of the work to get done. Our household hazardous waste program, those are contracts with our local regional counties that are working on those. Sampling analysis, in some cases there are labs, there are only certain labs that can do that. We work closely with the Department of Health and in some cases DNR, who does, for instance, fish tissue analysis for us. So we do work to do that, and of course some of our major costs are our Superfund petroleum cleanup and the closed landfill cost. And those will have a master contract that we do work orders and assign those as projects come. Just to give you a sense of kind of the numbers of things that happen and the cost, these are FY08 contracts and costs. Some of our master contracts, because they could be written for 5 years, will not be drafted in one particular year. We're working on one right now for remediation that as the upper limits of $75 million that might be extended over 5 years, depending on the situation. Of course, we don't spend that money unless there's a need and the work order is there, and we can fund it. The annual plans, these are cost less than $5,000 at an event, so they might be where we partner with a local event, or we bringing in cost and paying the cost of the speaker up front for the Air, Waste, and Water Conference. It might be some shared resources that we're doing. So those are training events, typically sponsoring with things on the green buildings, impaired water research symposium that we did, a neighborhood sustainability seminar, asphalt recycling forum, those sorts of things. They also have such mundane things as maintenance and winter plowing. Our technical contracts, for instance, have some areas as investigating stormwater best management practices, the safety and health training for our household hazardous waste. We get a household hazardous waste air quality study to know whether those people collecting hazardous waste in the buildings on a regular basis are have good solid air and what we might have to do relative to that. So we have some small studies under there as well, some pilots for BMP management and stormwater. Work orders will be the typical areas where our remediation programs extend their money. And so we have those master contracts, TMDLs, and those things. We just issue work orders for the work to get them. Under the grants, you will three major ones that would be listed under there are the Green Fleet Initiative that we've done, MNTAP, which is housed at the university and provides work with small businesses and industries so that they can reduce their waste and conserve energy, and each of those businesses also helps pay for that, so it's a shared activity. And then again, we have our feedlot grant work goes out under the grant, our soil and water districts, TMDLs, and those sorts of things go on. Interagency work is again, things that we do for data management, the backing up of computers so that we have warm sites with the Office of Enterprise Technology, pass-through grants that we do that we may move to Bowser, and Bowser then will move out to the Black grants to do.
Representative Gardner has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I could save it for the end, too, but I guess I'm a little confused. We're not talking about a huge amount of money since the PCA is not as general fund dependent as the DNR. And I'm hearing of good deficiencies in economies of scale and so on, and that's great. But I guess I'm not sure I see the connection between the good stuff that's going on and what's actually going to be cut. And I'm just seeing some broad categories of multimedia, air and water, and I guess I'm trying to find out what might be coming down the pike.
Well, we don't know what's coming down the pike. And these are things that, because I think that question is for me, I had asked them to put together some additional things so we may make different choices. And we may make choices between agencies, too. So if one agency is doing things that have less priority than another agency. So it's hard to know how to do that without kind of having things on the table.
We just had a different presentation from the DNR that was relatively thorough of where the increases and decreases were, and if that's coming, then that's great for PCA.
Well, they gave us their general decreases, but there may be additional efficiencies that could be had at this agency. And certainly we're getting ready to get into one of them. If you want to continue. Excuse me, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I don't want to take too much time, but in light of what Representative Gardner had said, I would like to know maybe if we're going to get some more information on Thursday, how this 4% reduction will affect, for instance, household hazardous waste programs, Superfund and petroleum cleanup, and the closed landfill construction and O&M, which are contracts. But what would we see in 09 and 10 that would be affected by the 4% reduction?
Okay. I think that's a thirsty question. Thank you. If you would continue, I mean, we are somewhat running short on time.
Just about time.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just to, you'd also ask me about stakeholders, and we don't run very many stakeholder groups. We run them on all the TMDLs, which is required as part of the process, and we typically run them on rules, but I do not have a cost breakdown for you that way.
We would not need them on TMDLs. It was the two recent stakeholder reports that I got that were troubling to me, and I thought maybe if the members thought it would be troubling to them too.
So I could provide them to you on those two reports that we discussed yesterday, and certainly could provide that on Thursday.
That'd be fine. Yeah.
One of the other things you asked were the costs relative to the ethanol mining and economic development. And so what I've provided in this table is, again, the cost as we have done, and you'll see we have the salaries for those three areas. The expenses, supply and expenses that we do, and in this case we show the indirect that we do charge for program-specific sorts of things. And those totals, and then we were also last year given a one-time appropriation for an air emissions study, and we're reflecting that cost here as well.
I'm not understanding this chart. You get no revenue from ethanol mining and economic development? It's all expenditures?
Madam Chair, there will be a small amount of revenue for water permits, and I did not put those on here. So I will reflect that.
So you get no money from an ethanol company to do the permit, no money from a mining company to do a permit, just from a small revenue from water to do a permit?
That would be correct, ma'am. We're currently under environmental review for all facilities, including those under the economic development, which would be expanding bioenergy sorts of facilities, biodiesel, where we're seeing power plants starting to look up, and those air permits do not currently have permit application fee for any facility. For any permit application. Waters have a modest $350 permit application. There is no funding for any environmental review.
So, in essence, I feel several things here. In essence, taxpayers are paying for all of these costs. So general citizens, even though they don't directly benefit, they're paying the cost. And then the other thing that I would feel and would hope we have some response to on Thursday is if I were asking for a permit, I would want you to do most of the work and not me, since you are paying for it. And so would that be is that a likely consequence of the system we have set up?
Madam Chair, let me restate the question to make sure I understand it. Are you asking me that if you were the permit applicant coming in to me, that the agency itself does most of the work and you as the applicant do not?
Yes, well, that I would be reluctant to bring in a lot of work because I would figure you would do it. Would that be fair to say?
Your permit will not move very fast if that were the case. We require, for instance, in air, Your application must be complete, and that means the forms must be filled out. The data supporting air modeling, if it's required, must be done in draft. The draft data for all the environmental assessment worksheets must be submitted with it. We review it and do our separate review to see whether we agree. When we don't agree, we would ask you to revise it, and we would tell you where we don't agree with you. We do our separate evaluation of surface water, for instance, where it discharges, so that we set the limits in the permit. We do the non-degradation component, that is ours. So I would not say that we do most of the work. If your application is not complete, and I have done this more than once, I will return it to you and ask you to complete the application.
It is the state's responsibility to make sure the groundwater is not degraded. It is DCA's responsibility. But the cost of that is being, from what I understand from you, is being borne by you, not by people who are asking for the permit. Did I get that correctly?
At the present time, for any water permit by anyone, we really absorb most of the cost. The $350 for water permit fees do not cover the cost, whether it's a feedlot permit we're doing, a municipality permit, ethanol permit, or an industrial facility.
Members, the reason I bring this up is because in our finance bill last year, we asked them to make sure that people in these three areas pay the cost of their permit, mm-hmm. and to do so by this last January. And so when we were seeing the budget and not seeing a revenue stream starting to come in, that's where these questions came up. And they do have a report, which I will get to each member today. We will make sure we get it to today, where they show the statute and the current authority they have which seems to me to be sufficient authority to charge the fees back. But we did not get a direct response to the legislative request, and we got a very indirect response that answers, in my judgment, a different question. So I think we will hold off on that. We'll get these to you so that you all get to read their report by Thursday. So, Representative Gunther, did you have a question? I think we need to, we're going to need to wrap this up here, but if you had a question first.
Madam Chairman, I think you kind of hit on it. I was just saying that MPCA doesn't get anything from EAW or EIS permit.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, when an EIS is done, we do have the authority and we do charge all of the cost of an EIS back to the project proposer. Environmental assessment worksheets, the first part of that process, there is no charge on. And one of the things you will see in the report is that we are proposing to charge for environmental review.
Representative Vanzo.
Real briefly, for the members, thank you. Keep in mind that in the mining sector, this is an extractive industry, and once the material is gone and the profit has been made, it's gone. It's over. It doesn't grow back. It's not renewable. And so the public interest should be directed towards claiming a fee for the applicant, in my judgment. Also, keep in mind that the mining sector is booming in the world right now, and will be for several years. So, I would make the case for pay as you go.
I think we will end with that and expect folks back on Thursday. So.
Oh,
I haven't put the gavel down. I would ask Representative Gartner, would you move the minutes of the meeting on March 16th?
The motion.
Okay. Representative Gardner has moved that we approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Meeting adjourned.